It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Woolforth. Our topic today is fitness, which is something that really affects everyone. We spend a lot of time talking to elite athletes on our show, I think because we find them inspiring and we want to know what the limits of human capabilities are. But most of us are not at that level. Many of us really don't have a fitness program and kind of wish we did, or we have one on and off. And the benefits of fitness obviously are well known in terms of health, in terms of mental acuity, and in terms of what you can accomplish outdoors. So today's topic is fitness training, getting yourself fit. And I have a fantastic panel to cover all different aspects of this, and I'm really excited about today's show. In the studio with me today is Lisa Keller, who is a triathlon coach, owner of Multisport Training of Alaska. She's won the Gold Nugget. She's a two-time Eagle River Triathlon winner. She's run the Survivor Division in the Run for Women. We could go on and on and on, but Lisa's a coach, and I run with her in her weekly running classes, and I was really, really pleased to have her with me today. Thanks for being with us, Lisa.
Thank you, Charles.
Phyllis Pludre is a physical therapist. Her firm is Progressive Physical Therapy. She's going to help us figure out how not to get hurt, which I'm very much looking forward to, because that's a big problem I have, Phyllis.
Thank you, Charles.
Thanks for being with us. And Tiffany Rieke is a dietitian and president of the Alaska Dietetic Association, and she's coming to us from Fairbanks. Thanks for being with us, Tiffany.
Thank you. Pleased to be here.
So to begin with, you know, we spend a lot of time on our show talking to people who do a lot of outdoor stuff and are big, enthusiastic, physical people. And there's really no virtue in that, because if you're doing what you love, it's easy to do. But for folks who are kind of starting out and think of fitness as being a chore, it's much harder, and it's not that easy to get started. And so what I thought we'd do with today's show is begin by talking about starting a fitness routine, getting yourself fit if you're really out of shape, overweight, you want to change your lifestyle. And then as we go through the show, we're going to talk about people who are already at a good level of fitness. How can they bring it up, maybe become competitive? And then towards the end of the show, we'll talk about people who are already competitive and want to increase their performance, deal with aging athletes, which I know is a big cadre of our listenership. And then finally, at the end, maybe we'll get into bringing, you know, you're already an endurance athlete, how can you improve your performance and do an even better marathon? So that's our plan for today, and I hope you stay tuned, because there's going to be a lot of information. Lisa, you tell us about, you train people, coach people in running and swimming, mm-hmm. in sort of this span of different sports, and you have a wide variety of ability levels in your groups.
I have an incredible variety, and you've seen that when mm-hmm. you run with my groups too. I have one person who she's probably running 18-minute miles, and she came from just a walk-to-run program, and just running, being able to run is huge for her, and she's also done the same thing with swimming. And she's very inspiring, because it is a person who's come from doing nothing to getting inspired and trying to improve her abilities in all three sports and starting to compete in races, which is very exciting for her and for me to see. I love working with beginners. They're my favorite people to work with.
So someone who comes to you and wants to work with you, obviously they're already motivated, but how, I mean, it feels like people will say, you know, I'll tell people how much I work out, and they say, wow, good for you,
yeah.
You know,
but,
well, if I didn't, I would feel depressed and I wouldn't be mm-hmm. doing, you know, it's because I love it, you know.
Yep.
But for somebody who doesn't love it, it seems yep. like it's a big challenge, and that's why people don't stick with it a lot.
That's exactly it. And I don't think it's anything that I can give anybody. Mm-hmm. I can make the experience fun. And mm-hmm. for me, that's my number one goal in any of my workouts, is for it to be fun. And sometimes there's some pain involved with that fun. But in the very end, when you go home, you feel like you've accomplished something. There are some people who are just naturally drawn to the competitive part of it, and that's what keeps them motivated and keeps them during the dark winter getting on their trainer and on their bike for 4 or 5 hours at a time or on the treadmill. But there's other people who are just making those baby steps and trying to find what they do love. I think getting ready for a race is huge in keeping people motivated and on track. and then meeting the people and it becoming more of a social type activity becomes very, very important.
So you're seeing people at practice, you see them every week, and so it's it becomes part of your crowd. Somebody, you check in, what happened with you this week, you have a little time to talk and stuff
totally.
Like that.
And people notice if you're not there, if you find your little group, they'll know, oh, where were you last week, and kind of give you a hard time, and then you kind of become accountable to them, not just to me or yourself.
Mm-hmm. This is something I feel like if you have a treadmill or a stationary bike at home, you're a lot less likely to get on that thing than you are if you're going somewhere and meeting people.
I totally agree. And also just putting out the money to be in a group is a huge motivator to a lot of people. Uh-huh. You've spent the money, you better show up.
Yeah, that's true. So Phyllis, someone who has been inactive and wants to be active needs to be pretty careful about not getting hurt. As a physical therapist, what kind of advice do you have, or what kind of things should people look out for if they're starting out from couch potato and trying to do stuff? And you always hear these stories about, you know, a guy who spends a whole winter, spends all his time watching, football, and then he goes out and says, well, I'm going to, go for it. And
the weekend warrior, right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I would start off with saying that physical activity is like medicine. And it's probably one of the best medicines you can take. Mm-hmm. And when somebody is just starting off, I think that they probably should get some type of fitness exam. You know, we call it an adult fitness exam now from the sports community. And that will start evaluating, their flexibility, their strength, their balance, their heart rate, their blood pressure. And then you can move from there. You can find out some of their...
Is that something you do at a medical doctor, could do it with a physical therapist? Where do you go to do that?
Well, that's an interesting question. It's a great segue for my business.
Okay. you can just go to a therapist. You don't have to go to an MD.
Well, it's a preventive service. Mm-hmm. And physical therapy, mostly in this community, is thought of as a rehabilitative service. Mm-hmm. And so now we are just opening up the whole preventive service as in the next couple of months. Mm-hmm. And so... you won't be able to get that from your GP. You'll come to a physical therapist that does adult fitness evaluation. And, then you can start looking at, your risks, your strengths, your weaknesses. And maybe we can fine tune that and give you some information so that, you can go visit with Lisa and start working with her, mm-hmm. or whoever you wanted to.
Frequency of your workout, it seems to me, is very important in terms of avoiding injury, because if you decide that, well, I'm going to work out strenuously once a week, then you have got a pretty good chance of getting hurt. Agreed? I mean, you need to be sort of regularly working out at the same sort of level.
Right, right. And you can think of it as three factors: frequency, duration, and intensity. And so you don't want to, increase your duration, increase your frequency, and increase your intensity all at the same time. So mm-hmm. you could spread that out. Physiologically, there's a process, a biological process that takes place every time you exercise. And the load, the mechanical load of exercise stimulates more protein production, which then helps you build stronger, larger muscles. But if you go beyond like that set load point in your muscles, then you're moving into injury. And then that's a whole other category of treating tissue.
I see. So is there special advice? So suppose a client comes to you, who's severely overweight and says that he or she wants to get into a fitness routine to address that and just to become healthier. Are there special concerns for somebody who's starting out from that level about how they're going to build into a fitness routine and how to be safe and how to do it right?
Yeah, anybody who's obese should definitely be pre-approved, by their physician, mm-hmm. as well as this adult fitness exam also has questionnaires, movement questionnaires about, do you feel this when you, have this much intensity, or do mm-hmm. you, or have you had this in the past? So then you can start looking at some of your risks.
And you're looking for like cardiac risks or?
Cardiac risks, you could look for arthritis, swollen joints. You can look for balance issues, dizziness, mm-hmm. Those parameters.
Hmm. Fascinating stuff. I have so many more questions. That was Phyllis Poudre, a physical therapist. She's in the studio with me here in Anchorage on Outdoor Explorer, and Lisa Keller, a coach, is here with me. And Tiffany Ricci is joining us from Fairbanks. She's the president of the Alaska Dietetic Association. Tiffany, what kinds of I would think that fitness activity should be a pretty important part of any weight loss program, but you also have to think about what you're eating. And I've often wondered about, you know, if I'm fortunate never to have had a weight problem, and probably just because of my metabolism, but if you are dieting and working out at the same time, it seems like you'd feel pretty rotten. And I'm curious about what kind of advice you give to someone who's sort of just starting out and trying to maybe address weight issues through fitness and diet.
Well, that's a great question. And with fitness, and I think that all of us can attest to, it's kind of a lifelong thing. You know, you don't go on a fitness diet. You know, you start and stop. You want something that is fun and that accountability to keep going. And the same thing is with nutrition, because diets give us this notation that we're going to start and then we're going to stop. So I'm going to eat healthy until I get to X weight, or until I run this marathon or race. And what we really need to rethink our mindset is that this is a lifestyle change. So one of the first things that we do is we, you know, assess where people are and kind of ask them to keep a little food diary just to see what they're eating and kind of bring that awareness, that mindful aspect to what we're putting into our bodies. And then we really promote more of a plant-based approach, because when you are making these physiological and neurological changes in your body that come with the adaptations of fitness, you need that recovery, and plants contain vitamins, minerals, and phytochemicals that help us do that. So, and that will also prevent that rotten feeling. There's this notion that if you're going to lose weight, you've got to starve yourself, and that's quite the opposite, especially when you're doing exercise. Your body requires calories to maintain basal metabolic rate, or just, you know, to be alive, and then additional calories on top for activity. So you need to be fueling your body. And when you're eating a lot of plants, they don't have a lot of calories, so you can kind of eat a little bit more of them. You know, a plant-based diet that's about 2,000 calories is a ton of food, whereas a McDonald's diet of 2,000 calories, you know, can fit in your purse. So it's not a lot of food. So that kind of helps. And then making sure that you're hydrated with water and not liquid sugar is another thing to focus on.
Mm-hmm. So what you said about lifestyle, I think, is so key to all of this, and really to what Lisa was saying as well. Rapid weight loss, the sort of get in your bathing suit by summer thing, is maybe unhealthy compared to the idea of you're now starting on a new life with a new way you eat and a new way you're active and a new set of habits. And if it doesn't turn into a habit, it's not going to work. Mm-hmm. It has to be
right.
Something that feels like your normal life.
Right.
So how do you, I read something once about doctors complying with, with the patients complying with doctors' instructions, and the compliance rate for just taking the medicine was abysmal, and their compliance rate for lifestyle change was like microscopic. I mean, you can't, as a dietitian, you could talk yourself blue in the face, right? But if the person isn't personally motivated to change their lifestyle, it's simply not going to happen.
Right, and if they're not, and we experience that, people who are not ready to change, you're right, it doesn't matter the amount of information or statistics that you give them, they're just not going to make that change. But when they are, I agree with that accountability factor, having somebody that knows what sort of choices that you are trying to make with your food when it's at the grocery store, when it's at work. That's very beneficial for helping to make those changes. And then looking at this, you know, I can't expect that if I'm not running at all, that in a week I'm going to be able to go run a marathon. There are very few people in the world that can do that, and that's not recommended. And so when it comes to making diet changes, you can't overhaul years worth of habits in a week. So if you take something small, like maybe your breakfast, so instead of having, and not to pick on McDonald's, because I think they might offer healthy options. However, instead of having an egg McMuffin, you could make that change into oatmeal and berries and some nuts. And then water, and try that for a week and see how that goes, and then start tackling lunch, and then start tackling dinner, and make those incremental changes so that you see success early with the small goals that you set, and then they can build on one another.
Mm-hmm. I'm interested, and maybe all the panelists can weigh in on this if you have thoughts on it, that whether a goal orientation is positive and or negative in that, Lisa was talking about having a goal of a race will keep you going to practice. On the other hand, if you have a goal for your weight or your fitness, it could be kind of discouraging, especially if you're trying to develop a sort of lifelong lifestyle habit. So, Tiffany, how do you feel about goals?
Well, I think that the minute that we're told that we can't do something or we shouldn't, it makes us want to do it more. Like, I can't touch the button or stick my tongue on the frozen flagpole. It makes me want to do it. So focusing on a positive thing, like I, will eat 5 servings of fruits and vegetables a day. And when I'm making those choices, I kind of automatically have to let go of some other choices. So if I'm going to have an apple and some string cheese for a snack, I'm not going to have my chips. But I'm focusing on what I am having instead of what I'm not. And when you look at a plant-based diet, there are so many options that the combinations are endless. So it's such a positive way to look at it instead of a negative.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe if you do have, and this is why exercise is so beneficial for weight loss and weight maintenance, because you can focus on the positive of that. So I might, instead of pounds lost, So instead of always getting on the scale, maybe it would be helpful to say, I went to the gym 4 times this week.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. And when you're doing that, you're, effectively losing weight or losing inches or, changing your body composition. So I think the positive tends to work better with people.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Woolforth. We're talking about training for fitness. And we've got a panel that can bring in all of the dimensions of that. Lisa Keller, who's a triathlon coach and athlete. Phyllis Pludre, who's a physical therapist here in Anchorage. And Tiffany Ricci, who is a dietitian and president of the Alaska Dietetic Association, who you're just hearing from. So let's move on to the next level. Somebody who is not struggling with weight loss, maybe gets out and hikes, maybe skis, occasionally, but really hasn't focused on developing fitness. And Lisa, how do you sort of measure where somebody is and figure out sort of where what level they should be working at when someone like that comes to you?
Well, in groups, I periodically do time trials because that's also a good way to figure out how hard they should be working at every workout. And also in swimming, it's also kind of like the business end of it. Like, I need to figure out where people are going to go in lanes and how I'm going to manage those lanes. So I want to put similar people together. And in running, it's the same thing. Then I can kind of group people and they can work out together and be a support system. When I first have someone come to me in a group situation, I'm also just watching them as they warm up. And so I look at technique. I look at how comfortable they appear to be doing it.
And talking about running now.
Running, yeah. And swimming. Yeah, mm-hmm. So in swimming, if I have somebody new.
Not a good swimmer, yeah.
Right, because people have, especially in swimming, it seems, don't really understand where they're at a lot mm-hmm. of times compared to other people. So it's really important to watch them and figure out where they're going to fit in best. Really quickly, back to goals, too, mm-hmm. which I think is important at this level now, too. When you start looking at a goal like a race that is going to keep you on track for 6 months of the year, we also work on setting different levels of goals. So you don't just have one goal, like I'm going to finish in 2 hours and 30 minutes. You have a goal of like, well, this would be my best day, would be 2 hours and 30 minutes, but I'd be pretty happy if I did 2:45. If I'm over 3, I might be a little disappointed, but mm-hmm. if I finish, I've met that goal. So finishing is always a goal, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So how much, how often do you think somebody needs to work out in a week? Let's think about somebody who maybe is a nine minute mile, you know, so basically a jogger, but they're, you know, they hike in the mountains every so often. How often do they need to work out for it to be, to show improvement and to sort of be building fitness? But just coming to your group once a week isn't going to do
it. No, and I have people who, all after talking to them, I'm finding out, oh, they're running on Tuesday, and then they don't run until the next Tuesday, and kind of back, same thing to what Phyllis was talking about in injuries, but it's also if you apply that stress and then you rest too long, then you're just going to be back to where you started. And so you never really get ahead. In running, there's really only three critical workouts you can do a week because the injury rate is so high in running. So you basically would have like a Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday where you have key
workouts. So you don't
want to
run 2 days in a row.
You don't want to run 2 days in a row unless one is a very short recovery run. Mm-hmm. So in marathoning with a more experienced marathoner, I may have them running 4 days a week. But I have people running very fast marathons on only 3 or 4 days a week. It's not like a 6 day a week thing for most people. Now, if you're talking about elites, that's a whole different thing, and
we'll
their bodies are different. Yeah.
But just in terms of what would give you benefit to be for improvement, 3 days a week.
3 days a week.
And how long?
Well, it depends. Each workout's going to be a little bit different. So in running, you're going to have a key long workout, which is long compared to the distance you're going to race at. Tuesday, you're going to have, typically this is the way it goes, Tuesday or Thursday, you're in a running group that's usually working tempo or 10K or 5K pace. So those are all like race pace at short distances, relatively short distances. And then the other day of the week would be tempo or half marathon or marathon pace, again, depending on what your goal race is.
So in terms of like how much time a person needs to set aside out of their life, it's not free. You need to set aside probably, you know, a couple hours on a weekend day and then an hour on Tuesday and maybe an hour on Thursday or something like that.
Again, it kind of goes back to your goal race. If you're going to be marathoning, yes, you got to look at, like, you're going to have that hour running group. You're probably going to build up the other run in the middle of the week to an hour and a half. And then your weekend run is going to probably be between 3 and 4 hours.
Right. And I'm assuming we're not, the person we're talking about now is probably not going to run a marathon. Their maybe goal might be a 5K or something like that.
Yeah, 5K. I mean, you could get by with, you know, the running group, 45 minutes on Thursday and maybe up to an hour on Saturday.
Phyllis, what are the concerns for this sort of person we're talking about now? It's not someone who's just coming off the couch. They are somewhat active, but they're trying to up their activity level and might, you know, might be a little bit older and might, you know, how do you advise somebody like that to avoid injury? What are some of the key things to be thinking about? We used to say stretch all the time, but now I guess we're not supposed to stretch, or it doesn't matter.
Well, I'm one of those people who's returning to a more active lifestyle, and I'm appreciative of having Lisa Keller as one of my trainers. And I've definitely had to start out with a plan and a schedule that has to be modified according to my injuries or my workday. And having a trainer, somebody that a specialist or a trainer that knows, you know, your schedule and can readjust it accordingly is really, really important. Mm-hmm. And then when you have an injury, and I'm fortunate enough to know, well, I have an injury and I pretty much know what to do for it, and I'll rest. As far as, you know, other people that are wanting to go a little faster, a little farther, I would say that looking at having someone who can evaluate your gait and your running patterns would be really, really helpful, so that you could, optimize your strategies for those activities, whether it's running, swimming, or biking.
So obviously pulled muscles are a very common injury for people who are increasing their activity. And for those, you just wrap it in a nice bandage and wait, or what kind of advice do you give somebody who's getting a lot of pulled muscles? And how to avoid them, and then how to treat them as well?
Well, there are various degrees of pulled muscles. So, you know, you can have a snap pop pulled muscle, or you can have a cramp pulled muscle. Mm-hmm. And, an acute management protocol would be police. And P would stand for protected.
And don't make it worse, in other words.
Yeah, protect it. Maybe put a splint on it. Maybe you need crutches. Maybe you don't need crutches. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe you just need to, you know, a little bit of weight bearing. And then that leads you into the O and the L of the police, which is optimum loading. And so you have to, you know, you have to evaluate what type of sprain, strain do you have? You know, what degree is that? And then the optimum loading helps you move towards tissue recovery. But too much loading, of course, will set you back. You know, just like too much intensity, too much duration, too much frequency could set you back, and the tissue would take longer to recover. And then ice, compression, and elevation. And you can do that for, you know, 2-3 days. You should be getting better, you know, less pain day by day. And swelling should be decreasing. And maybe you don't have any swelling. So then, you know, that whole protocol then is different for a person who doesn't have edema versus somebody who does. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in terms of avoidance, as Lisa knows, this is my big area where I need to work. And I pulled a muscle when we were doing a workout last fall, mm-hmm. where I was there was a sprinting component of it, and there was a younger guy that I was like chasing like an idiot. Pulled the muscle, and I came back, and Lisa said, "Okay, go ahead, but be a grown up this time." So I mean, I learned from, you know, I can't sprint. I like that. I'm beyond that time when I sort of fast muscle movement seems very healthy for me. Is that something that in terms of, is there a real physical therapy aspect of that like different, like fast twitch muscle is like different than slow, or that when you get older, slow down, or?
Well, basically it sounds like you asked your muscles to do more than they could do. Mm-hmm. You know, you wanted more torque, more power out of that muscle than that tissue had mm-hmm. available.
Got you.
Especially later on, you know, 20 minutes, 2 hours into your run, you know, you have less power at that point, less torque. And so when you ask it to do something it can't do, then it usually
tears or something.
Yeah, yeah. Injures it. Mm-hmm. Right. And again, you know, if you're able to keep running, then, you know, the injury's not as bad. If you have to stop, it's, you know, more involved for sure.
Yeah. Tiffany, Ricky in Fairbanks, as a dietitian, if you're talking to someone who maybe is not necessarily overweight, or maybe they're a little soft around the middle, but they're basically active, but they want to increase their activity level and maybe work out more frequently, what kind of diet advice is appropriate for that person?
So when people start getting into fitness, they start paying attention to what they're eating, and that's when they kind of can become prey to bad diets, or because they're hearing a lot of things. So one thing would be to encourage them to filter misinformation and kind of just keep with the basics as far as making sure that you're getting adequate calories, because you are increasing your workouts. And I remember running, and I mean, when you're blowing through those tempo runs at race pace or close to, it's you're burning a lot of calories, and your body needs nutrition to recover. So you want to make sure that you're giving it not only enough nutrition, but good nutrition as well. So, you know, meeting with a dietitian to figure out what your needs are to help you maintain your weight and then to keep performing, and then also getting adequate hydration. And then since they tend to start focusing a little bit more on their diet, looking at what they're eating and encouraging them to kind of cut the junk. So if mm-hmm. you're putting in, just because you're blowing through a lot of calories, doesn't mean you need to be eating a ton of Doritos to make up those calories. So not going to help your performance.
Well, I run into athletes who say that they feel a need to have a big increase in protein intake when they're increasing their workouts, and so they want to eat a lot of meat. What do you think of that?
Endurance athletes generally take between 1.2 to 1.5 grams per kilogram, and the average person needs about 0.8. So to say that you need, you know, a gram of protein per pound of body weight is just a little too much. And so your body uses protein very sparingly, and it will only use protein to do its job when you have enough carbohydrates and fat. So when you overload on protein, your body doesn't want to use it for energy. It wants to use it for what it's supposed to, but it ends up using it for energy. So the notion that you need more protein is a little on the false side. The average American diet actually meets the requirements for an endurance athlete's protein.
Okay.
So they don't need to eat more.
And what about carbs? And there's all this stuff about carbo loading before a race and eating a lot of carbs right after a workout. Is that a true one, or is that another one that is folk wisdom, as they say?
So as far as carbo loading, to go out the night before and eat a bunch of spaghetti is not necessarily carbo loading. You'd want to make sure that you were getting enough carbohydrates to meet your glycogen stores prior to even entering the race. And your body stores carbohydrates as glycogen within your muscles and your liver. And that's there's about enough glycogen in your liver to make it through a marathon. But that's only if you're getting ample amount of carbohydrates prior to the race. So you're not going to be able to do that the night before the race. So there is truth in that. That's where that well-nourished, adequate diet that's varied comes in.
So in terms of the carbo loading and making sure you've stored that energy in your body, you're doing it the whole week before whatever this major event is. And then otherwise, if you just have a healthy diet, adequate amounts of carbs, your regular workouts, you don't need to be doing anything special, or 5K, you don't need to be doing anything special. It's just for a big endurance event, you want to be loading up the whole week.
Right, right. Yes.
All right. Well, I have so many more questions, and it's a great topic and a great panel on Outdoor Explorer. You were just hearing from Tiffany Ricky, who is a dietitian and president of the Alaska Dietetic Association. She's in Fairbanks. With me in the studio are Phyllis Pludre, who is a physical therapist here in Anchorage, and Lisa Keller, triathlon coach, owner of Multisport Training of Alaska, and winner of many of our local events. And so we've been talking about sort of beginners or sort of folks who are a little active and trying to up their game. In the second half, we're going to talk about people who are already quite active and really work out regularly and want to improve their competitiveness or do longer events. But right now, it's time for the Outdoor Explorer Calendar. Next week, there will be a bicycle wheel building class in Anchorage at the Off-Chain Bike Collective. Students get to take a hands-on approach to building their own bicycle wheels. The two-day class takes place the evenings of March 18th and March 20th. That's a Tuesday and Thursday. The fee is $30 for both nights, plus the cost for materials for building your wheels. For more information on the bicycle wheel building class, visit offthechainak.org. The 5K Shamrock Shuffle will happen this Saturday in Anchorage. The race is put on by the Beartooth Theater Pub and Skinny Raven Sports. Racers get a free t-shirt and a free pint glass filled once with beer or soda on race day. There is a competitors meeting at 8:30 a.m. and the race starts at 9:30. For more information on the Shamrock Shuffle 5K, visit www.skinnyraven.com. And over at Kincaid Park, the National Championships and Super Tour Skiing Finals will happen March 22nd through March 28th. Watch returning Alaska Olympians Keegan Randall and Holly Brooks race against North America's top cross-country skiing athletes in 10 and 15K events. To see a schedule of the Super Tour Skiing Finals starting March 22nd, visit anchorage2014.com. And you can find links to all of those events on our website at alaskapublic.org. Finally, we have Jim Ravakis with us on the line to tell us more about the Homer Winter King Tournament. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Charles.
All right. Thanks for being with us. And Jim is the executive director of the Homer Chamber of Commerce. And the Winter King Tournament has been going on for a while, and it sounds like it's gotten pretty big. How much prize money are you guys giving out?
Well, it's over $100,000 in prize money and merchandise. This is our 21st annual Winter King Tournament here, so it's a long established event, and it's very popular. About 40% of our registrants are Homerites, and the rest are from out of town or out of state.
Yeah, so it's time for people to to get their boats out and get them gassed up and change the filters and get down there. And do you find that a lot of people bring their boats down from Anchorage for this?
Well, that's what we're hoping, Charles, because one of the limitations in the last few years is that there are just no more charter seats available. People have so much fun when they go out with a charter. They get done for the day and turn to their captain and say, sign me up for next year. And mm-hmm. and so we have a finite number of charter seats available, and so we're telling people find your best friend who owns a boat.
All right.
One down. Yeah.
What's the fishing like this year?
It's been really really unusually good. We think it's because of the warm weather, but there have been, you know, in a couple of major places in the bay here, along the bluff out near Seldovia, they have been stacking up, and people have been getting their limits.
So, is this a big fish tournament, or is it a tag fish tournament, or how do you determine the winners?
No, this is the biggest Winter King wins.
And then there's like other prizes for second place and so forth.
Well, the top 10 places win money. That last year, that top place was about $12,000 for the first place king, and so that goes down to the top 10. And 10th place is, you know, a little under 1,000 on the average. And then the 11th through 20th places are some pretty good merchandise.
All right. So we've got just a few seconds left. Date and how much it costs to enter, and how do people enter?
Okay. You can call the chamber and register over the phone. Get on the Winter King website, HomerWinterKing.com. Register there. Or come down on Friday before the tournament and register here at the Chamber.
All right. Thanks very much. Jim Levesque is from the Homer Chamber of Commerce.
And it's $100 to enter, and thank you, Charles.
All right. Bye-bye.
Take care.
We'll have a link to the Winter King Tournament on our website at alaskapublic.org and all the events mentioned on today's calendar. Stay with us for the second half when we'll continue to talk about training for fitness when Outdoor Explorer continues.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on KSKA Anchorage. The program repeats tonight at 9 o'clock on FM 91.1. Connect with Outdoor Explorer anytime. Download podcasts and see what's coming up on future programs by going to our website at alaskapublic.org.
It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Woolforth, and our topic today is fitness training. We talked in the first half of the show about starting a fitness routine, and we have a fantastic panel with us today to give advice. And in the second half, we're going to be talking about, okay, you're already pretty active. What do you need to know to improve your performance, improve your distances that you're doing, and to have your diet right and have your stay safe and deal with the injuries you might endure. And we have three experts with us, and so much knowledge here, I almost wish we had a much longer show. Tiffany Rickey is with us from Fairbanks. She's president of the Alaska Dietetic Association. Phyllis Pludre is a physical therapist with Progressive Physical Therapy here in Anchorage. And Lisa Keller, a triathlon coach, owner of Multisport Training of Alaska, and a very successful athlete in her own right. Lisa is someone has been working out. They run three times a week, or maybe they cycle or swim or ski. But they haven't really been in races, or maybe they've been in a couple of 5Ks, and now they want to increase the distance, maybe try a half marathon, or maybe try their first marathon. What kind of things should that person be thinking about in terms of building up to a higher level?
Well, one of the things I really like to emphasize is that it should be a journey, and that's kind of what we've all talked about, that it's not just a one-time thing. So it's just not on your bucket list to get a marathon, but something that you might do later on in life and keep doing. So I really like to see that progression when you first start. Like maybe year one, you do some 5Ks and maybe you do a 10K. And year two, you're doing a 10K and a half marathon. And then maybe year three, you start shooting for a marathon. Because that accumulated training time is going to pay off in the end too and help you be better prepared for all your training and hopefully not be injured. At the point where you start to get up to those longer distances, like a half marathon or a marathon, you really do need to have some structured training and focus on paces. And it kind of goes back to everything now. Focus on the nutrition during the event. So that becomes a little bit more important. How are you going to fuel yourself during the event? And you need to also be careful that you're not trying to do too much, too soon, too fast, too far. And there's a 10% rule in running. And it just kind of says that, you know, you don't want to increase any of that by more than 10% a week. So you might have a 3-week cycle of work that gets progressively harder. And then you also have a recovery week. So cycles then become in 4-week cycles with a recovery week and always a recovery day.
And recovery week means nothing? Or
it doesn't mean nothing. It's definitely cutting back on your volume. So you might have a little bit of intensity, but you're cutting it back on the amount of time you're training so that then you can repair all those muscles and get ready for the next hard week of or the next session of hard training, next cycle of hard training.
Now, in terms of if you don't have a coach, there's lots of training programs on the web, but I sometimes wonder the quality of them. I mean, sometimes they'll say, you know, get ready for a marathon in 6 weeks, you know, which probably is not a really good idea.
No, I don't like that.
So it's sort of finding quality advice, maybe out of a book or something, or from a more reputable website, or a coach,
right.
In terms of building a training program that makes sense and where you're not going to get hurt.
Yeah, and I think that you can find some, like Runner's World has plans, and usually they're fairly sensible. Really, for a marathon, you should be looking. I like 6 months. You should really be training for 6 months. It kind of depends on where you start again. But if you're a more active person, then 6 months is a good amount of time. Some people may need a year to prepare for it. So just to get themselves up to the half marathon point first.
And like you're saying, I mean, if you're going, you know, say I don't do much running. Now I want to run a marathon.
Yeah,
it's not a good idea because
it's not.
Because the training, you know, the summer training, you know, it pays off in your ski training. Your ski training pays off in the summer training. It's like sort of having this base of training that's like a long lasting thing makes a huge difference, doesn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. And kind of the example I can use is myself because I've been in doing all of this stuff since I was a very young kid, like a teenager. And I can now, I shouldn't say this, but I could lay off and not do anything, but I could pop back in a position, in a much better position than like Phyllis could be, who hasn't had the same high level of training for so many years. You know, it's going to take her longer to get back to the same point once she stops.
Yeah, so, we did a show with some elder athletes had, you know, Tim Middleton and some other folks. And you realize that it keeps building up, even into your elder years. If you've actually been working out regularly your whole life, the benefits that accrue to you hold over.
Absolutely, without a doubt. So it's really important, not just in the short term to build up a base, but also you're looking at your years from here on out, building up a base.
Cross training, does cycling, I mean, if you don't want to be running more than 3 days a week or 4 days a week at most because you need to have some recovery from that impact, what about cycling, swimming, doing other sports in between? Do they have the same benefit?
Well, there is a rule of exercise specificity that if you want to be a better runner, you've got to run. But you can only run so much. In triathlon, 86% of the injuries are around running. So running is very high risk. So any cross training is good. And I think that's when you see triathletes that sometimes are sidelined on their running, they're still able to cycle and swim. So it's good to have those backups to do.
What's the limit? I mean, somebody wants to work out every single day. Is that a bad idea? Because the body needs to rest. And if they run 3 days and cycle 2 days and swim 2 days, then that's too much.
Well, triathletes who are competing are generally getting in at least 2 workouts a day, usually 2 workouts a day. But they're also taking a rest day. I mean, I really believe that there should be a day that's completely off of nothing if you're competing at that.
At least one day.
At least one day. If you're competing in triathlons that are of any length, yes, mm-hmm. you need to take a day off.
And if you're the person we're talking about who's trying to jump up from 10K to a half marathon, then probably 2 days of rest a week is not a problem.
Yeah. Right. And again, it kind of depends on where you're starting from, because mm-hmm. part of it is applying the stress, you know. Like, it's better to take a workout if you can't go, it's better to go, if you're new to it, to go 2 30-minute sessions during a week than 1 1-hour session. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not the perfect example, but it's like you got to get that, it's better to have a shorter amount of stress but separated than one stress all at once.
Right. Phyllis Pludre, as a physical therapist, I'd like to sort of focus on some of the common injuries that, you know, sideline middle-aged athletes, plantar fasciitis is a foot problem, shin splints, and then, of course, joint problems. And sort of what, if you could go through those in terms of, is there any way to keep them from happening? And then if they do happen, does it mean that you're done with that sport and you, or is there a real recovery prognosis?
Overuse injuries are what you're talking about when you're starting to train, especially with running. And, you know, it can happen with a quick snap injury, or it can be kind of insidious where it just takes time and then finally you have shin splints. Or, you know, if you already have, let's say, tight gastrocnemiuses or tight lower calf muscles, then you're more prone to a condition called a little bit of hypoxia, where the oxygen's not making its way through all these fibers or tissues. So if you have something, you know, you start out with shin splints and they're not too bad and you start running maybe 2 or 3 minutes and you know, the pain subsides, and that's generally an indication that the circulation is now moving into these tissues that were somewhat hypoxic. And so then the shin splint pain feels like it's disappearing. Mm-hmm. And some people can actually recover very quickly from that and come back and run, you know, next day or 2 days later. And some people can't. So
you really just have to work with a therapist and figure out what your limits are and how you're going to work through that.
Exactly. Yeah.
In plantar fasciitis, that's a foot problem, right?
It is. It's the fascia, usually on the bottom of the foot, sometimes the bottom of the heel. And it, you know, it's an itis, so they think it's an inflammation of that tissue. It may be people who've been running for a long time, the impact has then decreased some of the fat tissue that acts as a shock absorber for the foot. So you're apt to get, you know, more inflammation in the bottom of the foot. You know, some people think that it's coming out of the back, actually. Maybe a nerve in the back is, maybe the S1 is affecting the heel area, which then you're more susceptible to some type of injury.
Will that go away? I mean, just with rest, or is it?
Well, it could go away with rest. Again, you know, everybody's different. Mm-hmm. And you know, relative rest is if it hurts, don't do it. Ice mm-hmm. is good for it. Stretching is good for it. Stretching, you know, the whole lower leg is really good for it. Active release therapy, which is a type of manual therapy, is very good for it. Sometimes, you know, anti-inflammatory agents, sometimes even, you know, cortisone injections. Various people, you know, are plagued with it, and various outcomes yeah. depend upon, you know, how who you are and how you work with it.
What about joints? I've been some people take these glycosine, or is there any validity to that to cushion their joints? Am I using the right word?
I'm not. There's chondroitin.
Okay.
You know, you might ask Tiffany about this. Mm-hmm. This moves into more mm-hmm. supplemental right. or diet, the diet aspect for the joints.
Once your joints are shot, they're shot, though. They have to be replaced, and there's nothing a physical therapist can do to fix a worn-out joint, right?
Oh, a worn out joint. Well, I'm not sure what you mean right. by that. Maybe, you know, if you have serious osteoarthritis where mm-hmm. you have bone on bone, you know, you're not going to be running. Mm-hmm. If you have, you know, maybe mild to moderate osteoarthritis, there's a possibility, you know. I don't know if mm-hmm. maybe you could do a marathon, maybe you could not. But I think there are, from a physical therapist point of view, there are ways to look at those strategies again, you know, the alignment, the stabilization, and the movement of your running pattern or your swimming pattern, and saying, let's find a more optimum strategy and see if that can change some of the stresses that you're placing on that joint.
Don't just give up. Go and talk to a therapist. And I do hear from a lot of people who have just given up, and that's probably not, you need to really go through the medical system and find out if you should be giving up or if there's a solution.
I agree.
Yeah. Tiffany, I know that you need to go, but I wanted to get you in on the topic of marathon diet for marathoners, or diet for real endurance athletes, and maybe I've spent some time with elite athletes through this show and through, you know, skiing and stuff, and you hear about people like eating sticks of butter and stuff because they're working out so much they're just having trouble getting enough calories in their bodies, and I'm wondering what kind of issues people who are really at that higher end of competition face, and how they deal with those.
So, I mean, when you are hungry and you're not getting enough calories, then that definitely hampers performance. And I think figuring out what your best, what we would call macronutrient composition, meaning there's a range at which we need an acceptable range for the amount of carbohydrates, fats, and proteins as far as the percentage of calories they make up. And so some people are a little bit more satisfied with a higher carbohydrate diet, and some people are a little bit more satisfied with a higher fat. Now, fat provides more calories per gram, and so somebody that's eating sticks of butter might be eating a high carbohydrate diet, so they're lower in fat and really needing that. But, you know, getting kind of understanding that you might need 1,000 calories for breakfast, 700 for lunch, and 500 or 600 for dinner, which is, you know, and then snacks in between. And that's a lot of bulk to take in. So when you have to eat that much, you know, you're eating a lot of peanut butter, which would be a healthier fat alternative than butter, avocado, and making sure that all the bites of food that you eat are calorically dense. So adding in fat generally in the form of nuts, seeds, and complex carbohydrates. So instead of having, you know, maybe broccoli as a side with dinner, you would have maybe broccoli, you know, chopped up into quinoa. So you have some whole grains that would give you more calories.
So rather than going out and eating burgers and steaks and all that stuff because you feel like you need to get more calories on board, there's other ways to do it that are healthier.
Yes, yes. And when it comes to keeping your joints and everything healthy, making sure that you have the right amount of antioxidants, you know, vitamin C, vitamin E, beta carotene, and selenium. And those come from a lot of plants, but they help your body repair and prevent that oxidative damage that comes from the stress of exercise. So it helps the body working with that, making sure that you're getting enough vitamin D also, particularly us in Alaska, which we are all, we don't get.
We're all short on it, yeah.
Yeah, and so that would definitely help with that. And then also making sure that you are, if you are doing that endurance, those endurance sports, that you're hydrated during your activity. So you can go and get your sweat, do a sweat test and find out, first of all, how much you lose when you're doing activity, and then what is the composition of that sweat? Are you losing a lot of electrolytes? Some of us sweat, and I know not up here, but when I was in the lower 48, you would have that salt stick. So that would say that I'm losing a lot of sodium, whereas some people don't have salty sweat. So knowing kind of what you're getting that test done would know how much fluid you need to replace while you're working out. And, you know, the average person loses about 2% of their body weight. So a 150-pound person is losing about 3 pounds of fluid. So that's 48 ounces that they would need to replace during exercise, you know, in addition to everything else that they're taking in during the day. So that's also important to maintain, because once you're dehydrated, your performance just drops.
is it important to be drinking Gatorade and getting, you hear about the sports drinks, electrolytes, before you do an endurance activity as opposed to water? And also, if you could comment on goos, which are these quick energy shots that you take during a race, if you think those are important.
You know, when you're doing an endurance race, you know, 2 to 3 hours, they say to replete with 100 to 240 calories of carbohydrates every hour, which is about 30 to 60 grams. And if you can stomach goo, I know they have lots of flavors, so you kind of got to get used to try them. But they quickly dissolve. So does hard candy and... depending on what you're doing, like you wouldn't want to pop in a Jolly Rancher maybe if you're running.
Right.
That might not be a bad thing to do when you're on the bike. And then, you know, so yes, and those Gatorade sports or Powerade, those sports drinks do help with that replenishment, you know, and taking in about 240 calories. So what is that? A 16-ounce bottle every hour. But if that's, and I think
that'd be hard to take on if you're really exerting yourself, I would think.
Exactly. And so then that way, you know, having a little bit of fluid and then having something that doesn't sit in your stomach but that breaks down pretty quickly as far as carbohydrates, which is what those goos do or those energy chews. Bananas help with that also. They quickly turn into glucose to replenish those carbohydrates that you're burning through.
Well, thanks so much for being with us, Tiffany Ricci from Fairbanks. She's the president of the Alaska Dietetic Association. Great info. I think I'd like to have you on again sometimes because there's so many more questions I'd like to ask you, but I know that you need to go. So thanks for being with us.
Yes, thank you very much.
So Lisa Keller, as a coach, just a couple of minutes left here. You must have seen some pretty satisfying things happen when in the years you've been helping people get fit, and just sort of tell me about some of the changes you've seen in people and what they're able to do, and you know, maybe some of your favorites.
Well, I think the one I mentioned at the beginning of the hour, she's been really cool to work with and very inspirational because she did it the right way. She wanted to do the Gold Nugget Triathlon, and she wanted to do Lava Man, which is the triathlon over in Kona that's coming up in a couple weeks. 200 Alaskans go to it. It's pretty big. And she came to me over a year and a half ago, and she didn't know how to swim. So we've been working together for a really long time.
Wow.
And I mean, she was at the walking stage too. And so I had to get her up to running. So she was very unfit. And she's just made some huge strides. So that is just, she's got to be one of my most fun people to work with because she did it the right way. And it's always kind of funny right now talking about Gold Nugget coming up because, or Lava Man, you know, if you don't know how to swim in triathlon, it's pretty huge that you start working on that really early. And she did.
Uh-huh.
And so I liked her process that she knew it was forever.
Yeah, so it's a making it a habit, making it a lifestyle.
Exactly.
A great point. Well, thanks. That's Lisa Keller, triathlon coach. Her business is called Multisport Training of Alaska. It's linked at our website, alaskapublic.org. We also had Phyllis Pluje, a physical therapist, and Tiffany Ricci, a dietitian from Fairbanks. Thanks for being with us, all of you. It was a really, really fun discussion, and I very much appreciate your presence here. On the next show, we're going to be talking about the Eklutna Traverse. You'll have guest host Andy Fight with you. Does a changing glacier mean a changing adventure? Thanks for joining us today on Outdoor Explorer. Our producer is Monica Gokey, and I'm your host, Charles Wolforth. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.